bakers, we want our fresh produce to meet your expectations, which is why we're dedicated to doing up to a 27-point inspection on our fruits and veggies, checking for things like scarring. In fact, only the best produce, like zesty oranges and crisp carrots, reach our shelves. Because when it comes to fresh, our higher standards mean fresher produce. Bakers, fresh for everyone.
Save big on your favorites with the Buy 5 or More Save a Dollar Each sale. Simply buy 5 or more participating items and save a dollar each with your card. Bakers, fresh for everyone.
You think you're not slaves, but you are. The 9-to-5 existence of your current lives is structured by the American industrial complex, complicit with our government.
So it leaves you really questioning everything you thought you knew.
This sense of separation, this sense of isolation is the thing that is within you and me. It makes us feel alien to everything else that's outside of us. So that is why, as you sit there within your body and you look out through your eyeballs and you listen through your ears and you look around you, everything else is not you. And you don't fit.
You're listening to Up Is Down with Dean Reiner.
You've got to understand, as you know, especially if you're in this so-called alternative, you know, looking for the truth about things, you got to understand all these agencies are set up the same, from the Federal Reserve to the Post Office to the Futures and Trading Commissions to the CIA to Amtrak to whatever. They all have boards of governors. They're set up just like any other corporation, essentially. And you're no different than the Federal Reserve. You're no different than the Central Intelligence Agency, except the power that is given to you. And the Post Office is actually extremely powerful, not in your position, but in the higher ups. You know, being Benjamin Franklin was a postmaster general or whatever.
He's the very first one.
Very, very powerful position to be in. But the rest of this is all for profit. It's a entire system of Ponzi schemes that all work interrelated, and they're all independent. They're all called independent agencies of government. And there's if you're talking about the Federal Reserve, and you believe all the Patriot nonsense, what I call the Patriot mythology about the Federal Reserve, which I have disproven over and over, and nobody likes it because it interferes with the fake history that the truth movement follows.
That's right.
There is no difference between any of these things, the Post Office and the Federal Reserve. There's definitely no difference between those. They are all illegitimate corporations set up to, pardon my language, to fuck you every way they can. Right? This is the kind of mind control and trickery that has befallen us because we've lost the meaning of words. We don't know what these words mean anymore. We use them without understanding. We go to court and we're expected to speak legally, and we speak normally as if we're talking to a normal man. It's a trick. Everything is a trick. You've got to understand, as you know, especially if you're in this so-called alternative, you know, looking for the truth about things, you got to understand all these agencies are set up the same, from the Federal Reserve to the Post Office to the Futures and Trading Commissions to the CIA to Amtrak to whatever. They all have boards of governors. They're set up just like any other corporation, essentially. And you're no different than the Federal Reserve. You're no different than the Central Intelligence Agency, except the power that is given to you. And the Post Office is actually extremely powerful, not in your position, but in the higher ups, you know, being a very, very powerful position to be in. But the rest of this is all for profit. It's a entire system of Ponzi schemes that all work interrelated, and they're all independent. They're all called independent agencies of government. And there's so if you're talking about the Federal Reserve, And you believe all the Patriot nonsense, what I call the Patriot mythology about the Federal Reserve, which I have disproven over and over, and nobody likes it because it interferes with the fake history that the truth movement follows. There is no difference between any of these things, the post office and the Federal Reserve. There's absolutely no difference between those. They are all illegitimate corporations set up to, pardon my language, to fuck you every way they can.
Oh, my God. Man, welcome back to another crazy episode of the Up Is Down podcast with me, your host, your neighbor, your friend, your enemy, very much no longer your neighbor in Portland, Oregon, as I am moving out of the apartment bunker where I am right now. Probably my last episode recorded from the apartment bunker, as it is official. I have an announcement to make. I am relocating from the communist tire fire that Portland has become over the last year. But truth be told, I've been sick of this place for almost a decade. So I am moving on to greener pastures. There will no longer be an apartment bunker. I'll be recording episodes from the chalet in an undisclosed location about an hour away from communist Portland. In the countryside, little area, a little bit rural, a town of about 10,000 people. I'm very excited about this. This has been a huge push. It's a massive leap of faith. I'm upsetting so many different things in my life to do this. And honestly, I want to say thank you to everyone who's been downloading and sharing and listening, subscribing, especially the donors out there. It's your fault I'm doing this. It's your fault. I'm so grateful that people have been so responsive to the production I've done over here at the Apartment Bunker with Up Is Down podcast. And the crazy pivots and turns the podcast has made over the last year and a half, it's been unbelievable. And I still am learning so much every time I talk to anyone. Every time I do a show, I learn more and more. I'm just so grateful and I'm so humbled to be your lovely narrator in this life that we're going through. I'm so grateful. So thank you all very much. With this change comes an enormous amount of insecurity, as you can imagine. I'm leaving home. I'm very likely going to be quitting my job subsequently after making the move. And I've got a couple different irons in the fire, a couple different things to try to push up into the real full-time type of gigs. So there'll be more information about that as we move along. But needless to say, your support right now is needed more now than ever. And I appreciate everyone who's contributed to the show in any capacity, whether it's been emails, correspondence, links, and especially all you financial donors out there. Most notably, most currently, in the lead right now for executive producership is my new buddy, Frenchie Pierre. Man, thank you so much. Thank you for your donation. I really appreciate it. It does help. It doesn't even matter what amount the donations are coming in at for you guys. It all really helps out a lot. It serves to push me along further into a new level, allow the show to pivot. And with this transition, I am sworn and under oath to produce bigger, better, badder, blacker shows for you from the Up Is Down podcast. Okay, now that the business is out of the way, I want to share an amazing, incredible conversation I had with the one and only Mr. Clint Richardson. Clint Richardson is the black sheep, the badass, in my opinion, probably the only living punk rocker on earth who's actually talking about the so-called truth. Clint Richardson is basically, he's the pariah of the truth movement because he discounts and disproves all the supposed biblical truths of the truth movement. That's why I find him so compelling. I first discovered him listening to Ricky Veranda's show, The Ripple Effect. I think you guys should check out Ripple Effect, man. Ricky Veranda has an amazing show. He's also part of one of the guys that I call the Brady Bunch, who put me into the Union of the Unwanted. And that's an amazing group of people doing amazing things, and it's really interesting. But I was listening to Ricky Veranda's back, I think it was November 13th, episode number 279. He was talking with this guy named Clint Richardson, talking about the Red Pill Sunday School. Red Pill Sunday School is Clint Richardson's YouTube channel. He's also a massive documentarian. He's got hours and tens of hours, dozens of hours of documentary film he's put together. Most notably, of course, is Lethal Injection, I think is his first film. Corporation Nation is the one we're kind of going to be talking about a little bit, but not exactly about Corporation Nation, just really just the atmosphere of what creates a corporation nation. And again, Clint Richardson's YouTube channel is called Red Pill Sunday School. Every single thing Clint Richardson does is open source. The dude is broke, unknown, unliked, and unwanted. And I think that's fucking awesome. I love him very much, and I'm really proud to say that we are friends now. We talked for almost 3.5 hours, so I broke this conversation into two pieces. And really what we're talking about here is we're dispelling the myth of our so-called rights and the fake constitution that we all live under. Everyone's clamoring around for our constitutional rights and the elections and the mail and all these rights bestowed to us through the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and the Founding Fathers. And Clint very eloquently and very succinctly exposes that for a fucking Ponzi scheme hoax that's had everyone in the fucking rear for hundreds of years. It's really edifying to hear things from Clint's mouth. And the reason why I wanted him on the show today is because he's not just a guy who pontificates like I do. He actually spends his whole life researching this kind of shit. And as a consequence, he has been blacklisted, blackballed, shunned, delisted, completely eradicated, canceled over and over and over again. Except for the reason why his YouTube channel is still up and his information is still allowed to be accessed is because he's not asking for money. He follows the same kind of church model that I do. It's a value for value system. He offers it to you for free. He suggests, perhaps if you can, maybe give him a little bit of a donation, but it is not necessary. You are still able to access the information that he has. So without further ado, this is a super long episode, and the next one's going to be equally long. I don't want to waste any more time. I'm going to get right to it with Clint Richardson, the motherfucking badass, probably the only living punk rocker, free-thinking, self-authorizing, autonomous motherfucker out there doing research that I can ever imagine. He's the shit. We begin our conversation as he describes the admonishment he's gotten from members of Congress with their evidence and the information he's presented to them in very concise form. And so that's sort of where I just hit record and he was already talking. So let's get with it.
Made this whole sheet of all primary sources and he sent it. And it's amazing because like the higher up the person, the worse the response. Like the last response was from a scientist. He said, take your conspiracy theory shit and shove it up your ass. That's the kind of, I've gotten a lot of those kind of response. I got one senator or congressman, I think it was, that House guy, he said pretty much the same thing. And then someone else on his own tweet sent in the interview that Fauci did with like Newsweek, mm-hmm. talking about this gain of function stuff, and the guy said I was full of shit, you know. So it backfires on him every once in a while. But the response has been really, really immature and I guess cognitive dissonance, maybe, I don't know, but it's just been pathetic. Like no one's refuting any of the evidence. It's just take this, you know, you should be. One of the guys said, I hope you get the virus.
Oh my God.
I was like, wow, that's a congressman, huh?
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, you can't be surprised with that response though. I mean, it's almost like a magic spell. It's like there is a massive, it seems like a big cutoff, a stopping point of any kind of critical thinking almost yeah. across the board. It's like a crisis of trust in almost every single way.
This feels
not surprising like, at all.
Well, that though, it feels more like they're, you know, they're not ignorant.
No.
So something else is going on. Something it's always been out of my understanding too. But I'll tell you what, this guy that's been working for me, you know, he's doing it voluntarily. I'm like, dude, I'm so glad you're doing this because now you know. You can now understand without words what I'm going through. You can't explain the kind of banning and, you know, censorship you get until you try what he's been trying. So at least now I have a sort of a sympathetic ear instead of sounding like a whiny bitch about it. You know, he's like, now he's like, oh my God, I can't believe the resistance I'm getting for this, you know?
Yeah, it is unbelievable. It is. Oh, by the way, I should tell you that we are recording now. And of course, this is all going to be, none of this is live. And so at any point that you want to maybe motion to have something edited or removed from whatever you're going to say, just just say so, and I'll go back and make a time code and cut it out if you want.
Unless my Tourette's acts up, we'll be good.
I completely accept you in every and all forms and all manifestations, Clint. Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you today. I really, really am grateful for you to cut out some time to talk to little me over here in Portland, especially right now. This is like some of the craziest days. My life is super upset. I'm about to make a big move out of Portland, and it's all coming down to the wire. We just got the final approval on the appraisal and the loan. And if everything continues to go smooth, I'll be moving during Christmas, which is going to be hairy. And I can only imagine things are just as hairy for you. You're down there in Utah, is that right?
Yeah, Utah is not quite as bad as other places, and we don't have the rioting or whatever the hell you want to call that that organized crap going on here. I mean, we have it a little, but not as much. But yeah, for the most part, it's pretty calm. And you know, I'll be honest, man, I am fortunate enough not to have to go out that much. So nothing, it hasn't changed that much for me because I live on my meager donations that I get and, you know, the charity of friends and stuff like that. So, I mean, for me, it's been business as usual.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I'm actually moving out of Portland to a much smaller community of less than 10,000 people. And we're actually going to be just outside of that little city, that city limit. Not like totally rural out in the boonies. We'll have some neighbors that are pretty close, but it's so far removed from the land and the world that I've been living in here in Portland for the past 12 or 13 years. And I cannot wait, man. I can't seem to move around anywhere in the city and just not have the sinking feeling that it's only just going to get worse here. No matter what happens with any sort of political move or the vaccine or anything, it's just unbelievably discouraging walking out of my apartment every day. And I have a little girl, you know, I have a daughter, she's just about 7, and I have shared custody with her. She's with me half the week, and, you know, schools are closed. So, and I'm still in a quote unquote essential employee. I deliver mail for the government. So I'm working crazy, crazy hours right now. And then her mom also has a business that's not essential, but she's still making it work somehow. So we split that up. But, you know, my little one, she's in daycare most days of the week, and they're doing the distance online learning from the daycare. But it's just such a mess because we have to, now that there's a daycare, we have to do like this almost third party extension. So all the communications between the school district and her teachers and her school that are coming to us as parents, we have to then make sure that the daycare gets those emails and those notifications and that they're on board. And but they can't really enforce anything. And there really is no enforcement. It's all just suggestions. And, you know, this whole school experiment is destined to fail. It's already failing. And so we're just kind of chalking it up that, you know, it's first grade. And if she doesn't pass first grade, we're not going to take it seriously. We're still not on the same page as far as being able to homeschool, mostly because neither of us have the time to do it. But me moving an hour away is really going to upset that little apple cart. But it's just one of those things that I have to make the move, and I have to create a better life for myself and for her, and expose her to a different kind of way of life that's much more quiet and much more free. And so it's been pretty hairy here.
You know, and if you think about what is education in the first place, it's really just, you know, the tools to allow you to fit into a very strange sick society. To teach you the basics of history, but never actually teach you what really happened.
Right.
Because, you know, honestly, you know, one of the things I've figured out along the way is without history, without the history of the victors, without the big lie that we say is history, there is nothing backing up these guys claiming they have power. You know, you have to really believe in the whole, you know, founding fathers, story of the Constitution, and you really have to believe that that was much bigger than it was. You know, you have to believe that this history is what justifies this whole control system you're going through now. And without that belief, this would not be happening. And so we continue, with the education process, you know, an education, well, I did a thing on education and how corrupt the system is. Education refers to the training of animals. That's what education was before there was an actual system of education, you know. So all these words have a very different meaning when you apply them to the origin of the word. So, you know, you're talking about keeping them connected like this through the internet, I think, is even more important, because the less actual touchy-feeliness they have with people and with nature, then, you know, if you grow up, in other words, and your whole concept of nature and animals and plants and is through the pictures you see on a computer, well, then you're not getting any true experience. You're not getting anything out of that quote unquote education. You're like you're like a robot. You're like a, you know, well, I read the manual, but I've never actually used the machine, you know, and we're just going to throw you out into the machine world. So it's, dude, the whole thing, I mean, my perfect idea of growing up, if I had a choice now, I would have wanted to grow up on a farm where maybe we had a schoolhouse for the local kids, maybe not, and I could study the Bible and I could study and I could, you know, learn. But the real life experience, and after working on a farm, you know, the real life experience that I've ever had has been, you know, real life. When I got out of any school I can think of, any training I've ever been through is pointless until you actually start working the job or doing whatever it is you're going to do, where you learn on the job.
Right.
You know, you learn what you're going to be doing once you finally do it, which makes education just a questionable enterprise anyway. Now, I'm kind of an advocate of the whole apprenticeship idea. You know, forget this whole you know, indoctrination education, and let's go apprentice somewhere where a real high up executive or someone can actually take you under their wing, teach you. And then by the end of your education, they've taught you their whole company. They've taught you everything you need to know about that particular job. Why wouldn't they hire you? You know, because then you're going to go to their competition. You've been under the wing of someone that you paid to be under. You know, and that's how things used to be done. You know, it used to be, I'm going to be a blacksmith. My last name is Smith. Therefore, you know, my father was a blacksmith or whatever. And I'm going to go apprentice just like he did. That makes sense to me. You know, that makes a lot of sense to me. But this education system we have, it serves no purpose other than to bring you into the matrix, if you will. It just doesn't make sense. So
yeah, well, I mean, it makes sense to the experts whose real aim, you know, is to meld everyone into an anti-individual cog of a larger machine and just grooming and breeding these young children into perfect, predictable voters and participants in, like you say, in the matrix and the machine, something I call the glacier, which is just a slow moving destructive force that is changing the landscape. Irreparably and forever, completely. But really the goal is to just breed them, I think, into just perfectly predictable little voters so they can keep this. And I love that you use the word belief, the belief in these concepts of like the Constitution and justice and history, of course, written by the victors and is, you know, whitewashed at best and totally exclusive at worst. Because I think that's what does lend itself to a particular type of spell or magic or just a really interesting type of mind control that is dependent on one's own complicity and consent. And that consent comes in the action of belief, suspending the disbelief that there could be any other possible explanation for everything. And I think that's the most troubling part about it.
The more education you get, and I'm experiencing this firsthand, you know, trying to get people to look at the information I found, which is not theory in any way, you know.
Yeah.
This is like, holy shit, this is right out of their own mouths, what they're doing. It's really scary. It's going to destroy all life if we let them keep continuing, because they just don't give a crap what the results are. They have no moral compass whatsoever. And you know, it seems to me, in my experience now, is that the higher education and the higher place you have in, as far as a job, or in, you say you're a congressman or you're a scientist or whatever, but the more degrees you get, the more, you know, the higher you get it, as far as status, the less open you are to actual scientific theory, you know, the scientific method. You actually become what they call a consensus-based, you know, you go with the consensus or you lose your funding. You go with the consensus or you, you know, you know the consensus is wrong, but you go with it anyway, and everybody else be damned, and you make a public mockery out of if they're trying to present you with what you know is the truth. And that's, you know, that's, I think that attitude is actually spreading into the lowest ranks of us all. Like, you know, this, that's basically a reality. It's basically you go on, you look at comments and all these people doing these drive-by shootings, basically saying, oh, you're full of crap and your video sucks or this or that. Nobody, you know, everybody has, like I said, a belief, and that belief doesn't stem from anything but history, or what someone is trying to convince them is history.
Yeah, an interpretation of history.
Right, and that is the key to everything. I tell you, you know, I did a sort of an article a long time ago, it was in parts, but it was like the four pillars of what I call the four pillars of control or fiction. And that was one of them, is that you have to control, you know, he who controls the past controls the future, and he who controls the future controls the present, and all that stuff. You have to be the controller of the past to have any control of anything in the present and the future, because, again, that's what justifies all the crap they're doing, all the bad things that they do to us, and all the things that we allow them to do to us. We believe history dictates that's what we must do. And that's really an amazing, you know, once you come to understand that, you will never believe history of any, you know, I'll put it to you this way. How many times, you know, and everybody's guilty of this, there's no one that can say no to this question. How many times have you lied about yourself, your own history?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Maybe you're on a date. Maybe you got this beautiful girl. You're going to, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, God, if I told a girl who I am, they'd run to the hills, right?
Well, we do it every day, even in the most benign aspects, as far as like, oh, you know, it's okay if I'm 5 minutes late, or I don't have to tell this person why. You know, or, you know, I'm just going to buy this thing because even though I don't need it, I really want it, you know, and yet there's something inside of us that we're denying, which is some sort of culpability, some sort of integrity, you know, like,
well, it's that concept of hypocrisy, which is so important for people to grasp, because the word simulation and the word hypocrisy are one and the same. One is defined as the other. We simulate our history. We tell people things about ourselves. Oh, I don't go into all the horrific, you know, stuff that happens while I'm in Hollywood and while I'm doing all this sound design, but I can put my name on a resume and say, hey, I had, you know, I made God of War, or I made all these video games, I did this movie. But I mean, if you looked at what I did, I don't know anybody in their right mind that would actually want to sit there and do what I did to get my name in the credits of a movie. It's like the work itself is so disgustingly repetitive and boring, and right, but you get that prestige, and we know that prestige means illusion and trickery, right?
Yeah, well, you also get that credit, which then will lend itself to another banal job, and then after that another banal job, where, and then all of a sudden you have this life, this legacy of credentials and accredited work.
There again, how many times, how many people do you know, how many times do you see it in television, in the movies, how many people do you know have not lied on their resume, or not at least omitted some facts? Do you tell them you're fired, or do you come up with some creative wording that says you're no longer working there, right?
Right. Mutual disagreements, irreconcilable differences.
You make your own history. You simulate your own life to people. So that is hypocrisy, right? Not telling the truth. We all do it, and that's a very. When you take that as fact, right, you then expect people to lie to you because not because it's necessarily a bad thing, but because it's how we've been entrained and how we, you know, it's how we survive, really. I mean, if we were going around, walking around, you know, giving every detail of every moment, nothing would ever get done. So you make a concise little, you know, history of yourself. And you repeat it whenever someone asks, you say the same thing. See, we're all guilty of it, and that's the point. And the more you say it, the more you believe it, and the more you forget your real past. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you multiply that by 1,000, and you've got public school.
Yeah.
Well, the founding fathers, were wonderful men.
That's the most wonderful part about my ridiculous occupation as a letter carrier for USPS is that besides every single year, they pound the meme of save the post office and everyone. And there's such obvious solutions as to how to actually save the post office. But as soon as someone tries to do that, particularly that guy, Louis DeJoy, they say, oh, we got to save the post office, but get your hands off it. We don't want this guy because he's Trump's buddy. And then all the unions that always vote hardcore left because they're collectivist communists. They say this is a constitutionally mandated service. We can never disband the post office. We can never split this because it has been written into the Constitution. We have a right to deliver mail. We have a right for you to receive mail. But it stops itself.
That would be true if you were talking about the actual post office, but you don't work for that. You work for the for-profit corporate structure that's built on top of that.
Right.
Right. You're not working for, like, how many 3-cent stamps do you see? Right? That actually
only on postcards.
Right. And that represent a true, you know, a true, what are you, I guess you could say constitutional, but the original post office and what's supposed to exist as the post office is, you know, if I have to pay $50 to ship something to Europe, that's not the original post office. That is they're selling you a product, first class, they call it, or priority mail or all this.
Right.
Because nobody is inducing the original post office, just like no one's inducing their true selves. We're saying I'm a person. I'm not a real man. I'm a person of the United States, and therefore the United States Post Office can charge me for first class mail, and I'm not going to know the difference anyway. So, you know, if you want to know, I mean, look, I'll tell you what's wrong with the post office because it happened to be my area of study.
It would be best if you said that while I'm still employed there because I am forbidden to speak ill in any way,
well,
shape, or form.
Look, no one ever wants to take credit for the damage they do when it comes to pensions. Okay, when it comes to benefits, right? What happened with the post office and why it was in the midst of bankruptcy is because Congress required
the pre-funding. Yeah, they
required the pension fund to be pre-funded.
Yeah,
and suddenly the post office
75 years, I believe, into the future.
Well, and you know why that is? Because all that funding then goes to buy stock in corporations, in municipalities, in all these different places. And, you know, you look at the pension funds and you see that government, through the pension funds, has stakes and usually ownership stakes in every corporation in the world. That's because they're offering you guys this wonderful-looking benefit called a pension. If you look up what a pensioner is in the old days, back when Samuel Johnson did his dictionary, you know, he said the pensioners are traitors to their country because you're accepting essentially a bribe to, I mean, if you think about it, and again, people don't want to hear this. This is why I'm not universally liked because I tell the truth about things, and the truth is often not what you want to hear.
Which is exactly why I like talking to you. It's exactly why I like hearing you speak because you do make a lot of very, very valid points that are obviously anathema to the so-called fake truth movement and the whole patriot myth, you know.
I can't stand the so-called movement anymore. I don't even want to be a part of it. It's just that where else do you go, you know? So, yeah, but, I mean, the pre-funding of the pensions. And that way, so now all of a sudden all this money, the post office goes into debt, which makes absolutely no sense. They have to then borrow money and pay interest on that money to pay the pre-funding of the pension system.
Yeah.
Right? Just so they can keep this Ponzi scheme. And, you know, I'm sorry to tell you, but that pension fund is probably not going to be there when you retire. It's probably not going to be there for most.
I am so glad you said that, because I'm actually making moves to separate myself from the post office after this house deal goes through. And I don't know. I'm probably going to publish this podcast before I actually quit. But I plan on quitting within a month of this move, because I do not want to commute an hour an hour each way to go and enslave 12 hours to perpetuate a system that I don't believe in. That's contradictory to my very soul. And because I share that same belief. I have no doubt that these pensions are going to completely evaporate. I don't even think that they exist right now.
Well, it's, you know,
I'm just going to take what I have already, and I'm going to take my TSP, which is allotted to every other federal employee. And I finally looked at that, and there's a little bit of money in there, and I'm going to take all that, and I'm going to invest it into myself and my life outside of the post office, and stop selling my waking life to this bullshit system that just enslaves people. It is a bottom system for bottom people, managed by bottom people, and I've never fit in there. And I
never will fit in with that.
And
kind
I never
of attitude.
Will. No, I am a pariah on the floor at my office. Believe me, no one wants to hear me speak.
Yeah. Well,
except for a couple people.
Mostly
because I say the things that they want to say, but they don't say. And so I'm always raising my hand and creating trouble there.
You know, you have the right to get all your money back that you've put in that pension system, but you don't have that right if the pension system crashes. Now, they'll say, oh, well, there's a penalty, which means you don't get any of the promised interest and profits from it, but you're getting, you know, your own money back, which really, you know, is more than you're going to get if you leave it in there, probably, in my opinion. Now, what's important about the pension system is that it's so – and this is what people don't want to think about, because they think, oh, I'm such a small cog in such a large wheel that, you know – but if you take all the pensioners all around the country – and in that, in indeed the world, well, then you've got, and you're one of them, right? So you got to think, and in my first documentary, I cover this, pension funds, because they invest in all these corporations around the world. So, I mean, if you're a pensioner for the U.S. Post Office or any government agency, or for that matter, any corporation, you're invested in the worst possible companies you can possibly imagine. You're invested in Raytheon. You're invested in General Electric. You're invested in military corporations. That make weapons. You're invested in George Bush's what was it called? I can't even remember the name of his group that they all formed, all the Bushes and everything. You're a member.
Talking about PNAC there for a New American Century.
No, they had it's like an investment group. I can't remember the name of it. I'm sorry. But all these different corporations, all the Chinese corporations are owned by pension funds. That's how they were built.
Yeah.
So pension funds are actually responsible. They're the primary tool for globalism, because government, you know, they pool all those investments. They have corporate governance, which means that the main shareholder, which is always in every case that I saw government, will elect the board of directors, and therefore the board of directors will elect the CEO. So you've got this total corporatist system you don't even realize you're a part of, and it's all because you're drawing a pension. And that the funding for that pension goes into buying not only all these corporations, but also all the debt. Because, you know, billionaires are made from buying debt, and people don't realize that. Debt is very, very profitable, because you're buying the principal, but you've got all that interest going to come. It's like a future payment. You use that debt instrument that shows a future, you know, profit or a future payment, and you use that as collateral for some other loan, and then you get into something else. You buy more debt, and you start hypothecating everything. Suddenly, you're a billionaire, but you know, you look at the Social Security fund, it's all debt. Yeah. Every ounce of money that's invested in the Social Security fund, they turn around and invest it in debt instruments. So it's up to like $5 trillion in debt that they have purchased. And the only way that that fund has any possible way of existing is if we all continue paying our bills. We continue paying our student loans. We continue paying this thing that makes us debt slaves, right? We pay outrageous amounts of interest. We pay as long as we pay the debt, because I guarantee you everything is being bought up by these pension funds and similar types of, mutual funds and everything. Look at the main investor in mutual funds, government, or what they call institutional investors. So the whole thing is not what people think. And as soon, and I don't expect that to happen anytime soon, but as soon as people actually take that and say, okay, I'm a part of the problem, my pension is not there for me. It's like a worm on a hook that I just constantly am chasing after. Meanwhile, I'm allowing my money to be invested in war corporations, in Chinese corporations, in anything international. The China Bank, everything is owned by American and, Canadian and all the pension funds. It's really an amazing journey when you start to understand how that all works. And again, why would they bankrupt the post office by causing them to pre-fund their pension fund? Why does that make sense? Well, it actually makes perfect sense if you're interested in taking all that money, putting it in the fund, and then buying up the corporate interest of everything so that you have controlling interest. You just got billions of dollars that you can now buy stock or buy debt or buy, everything. Housing funds, anything.
Wow. And
eventually you find government owns it all. They own everything.
I know.
Through the pension fund, which is simply, again, a way of using you and your fellow employees as a method to put money into the fund and buy more corporate stock so that they become the owner. Then they have other corporate governments. They control what happens in the corporation. Dude, it's amazing.
It's amazing. It's farming. It's livestock. It's cattle. That's all of us. I mean, I'm so grateful that you just put that down into such a succinct little 9 or 10 minute rant, because that's exactly the message that I've been trying to figure out the language to talk about with some of my fellow coworkers and other people. And this is something I had an inkling of this about 3 years ago. I had a body tremor that was like, oh my God, dude, you are totally being led along by this idea of a pension. And I couldn't quite understand what it was. And I did not, because I work for the post office and I'm a dad. I just didn't have time to go digging through all this stuff. I don't know the keywords. I don't know the search directions to go to find out any of this information.
Are you saying you didn't learn in school?
They didn't educate you? I left high school, honestly. I got wise pretty quick and left high school to go work and all this other kind of stuff. I'm so glad that you're able to put that down so succinctly, because like I said, I had a notion of this, but I was never in a position where I could convey it with any coherent language that makes sense.
You might want to wait until you quit before you release this. I'm just, and then you can be like, hey, listen to this, bitches.
Oh, man, you know what? It's funny, Clint, because I've actually done a few episodes about the post office, and then probably about for the last 6 months here and there. And then over the over this whole coronavirus hysteria, the union that I pay my dues to, which is a complete fucking commie outfit racket, Ponzi scheme, as you say, and I've recognized this for years. It's just ridiculous. Their largest message to us as carers, because every month they put out a little monthly rag newspaper kind of thing, and for the last 2 or 3 months, the message that is the clearest and the loudest of every other drivel that's in these shitty pages is, do not talk about the post office to anyone. You are essential. You are a hero. Isn't this great? Look at all this revenue we're making from all these massive package sales. And of course, that's, I believe, the absolute opposite. But the message has been, get back to work.
Here's the problem, right? This is where people somehow have a cognitive dissonance even about themselves. when government calls you a customer.
Yes, exactly.
Then it's no longer government. This, you're being charged those prices. You're making all those profits because you're not government. You are a for-profit corporate structure that was a de facto, meaning illegitimate structure being put on top of something legitimate.
Right.
You have nothing to do with government. That's
absolutely.
What I mean. Absolutely. It's, and, you don't work and for the government. You work for its corporation.
Right. And then the unions want us to believe that they are the only thing standing in the way of our valuable service and the tyrannical U.S. government that would otherwise have us working 15-hour days, 7 days a week with no raises. But in reality, that is exactly what's happening. And the unions, our alleged heroes, our protectors, our shields from this tyranny, pat us on the back and say, doesn't it feel good to be essential? You're a hero. Wear the mask. And that just makes me want to puke.
People have different ideas about each agency of government. The post office, we all, you know, I think the post office is an essential part of life. I really do. I understand the purpose, and government certainly thinks it's essential because it has to notify you, has to serve you, right? To protect and serve. Well, that means serve summons.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can't serve you unless you have an address, a federal address, right? So everybody looks at these agencies differently, right? So you got the post office, which, you know, seems to be this innocent sort of thing. Everybody kind of agrees that it's a necessity, right? Then you've got some things like Amtrak, the National Railroad Passenger Corporation. But wait, that's a government agency? Well, yes, it is. You've got the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. You got the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You've got the Environmental Protection Agency, the Federal Communications, Federal Deposit Insurance, Federal Election Commission. And then in that same list, you've got the Federal Reserve System. Now, what have I just listed?
Yeah.
Federal Trade Commission, Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, General Services Administration, National Labor, National Science Foundation. What am I listing here? Do you know? I'll bet you nobody knows.
The corporation nation.
Well, you could call it that, but what these actually are they're, you know, you just type in, to go to Wikipedia and type in independent agencies of government. Your post office is run exactly like all of these other agencies and commissions, okay, including the Federal Reserve System. You got a board, right?
Yeah.
You got, it's run outside of Congress's control, because that's why they call it independent. And see, the truth movement says, well, the Federal Reserve is independent. Well, yeah, so is the post office, so is the communications, so is the FCC, the EPA, the CIA is also an independent agency of government run completely separate from Congress. Why? Well, congressmen can't be responsible for delivering the mail, now can they? So they create a corporation, a commission, a bureau, a whatever, a system, the Federal Reserve System, a board, an administration, and these are all corporations created to fulfill the corporate structure, the for-profit structure of government, which is all illegitimate, okay? De facto is another term for illegitimate. So you got the de jure, the government by law, and then you've got government agencies and corporations that are illegitimate, that are not by law, they're by fact. In other words, they're creations of Congress, okay? So you've got to understand, as you know, especially if you're in this so-called alternative, you know, looking for the truth about things, you got to understand all these agencies are set up the same, from the Federal Reserve to the Post Office to the Futures and Trading Commissions to the CIA to Amtrak to whatever. They all have boards of governors. They're set up just like any other corporation, essentially. And you're no different than the Federal Reserve. You're no different than the Central Intelligence Agency, except the power that is given to you. And the post office is actually extremely powerful, not in your position, but in the higher ups. You know, being, Benjamin Franklin was a postal Postmaster General or whatever.
It's allegedly he's the very first one.
Very, very powerful position to be in. But the rest of this is all for profit. It's a entire system of Ponzi schemes that all work interrelated, and they're all independent. They're all called independent agencies of government. And there's if you're talking about the Federal Reserve, and you believe all the Patriot nonsense, what I call the Patriot mythology about the Federal Reserve, which I have disproven over and over, and nobody likes it because it interferes with the fake history that the truth movement follows.
That's right.
There is no difference between any of these things, the post office and the Federal Reserve. There's absolutely no difference between those. They are all illegitimate corporations set up to, pardon my language, to fuck you every way they can. So that's what you're a part of, and that's where this pension system comes into play, because all these more agencies, the more employees you have that work for government, the more pensioners you can put on board, and the more, therefore, investment structure you can put into government. Now, you got to realize, when it comes to pensions, take judges, for example. Judges don't even, a lot of people don't even pay for their pensions. They don't contribute anything. It's government that contributes on their behalf, which essentially means the taxpayers are funding the pensions. So how do you completely rob the public? You charge billions of dollars to the California taxpayers, for instance, to pay for public pensions so that the judge doesn't have to pay himself. So all those California employees through CalPERS and CalSTRS and all, a lot of them do not contribute to their own pensions. It comes straight out of the taxpayer roll, right? So that means while California's sitting there and all these places are going bankrupt, the post office is going bankrupt, the taxpayers are paying for the pensions.
I know.
The whole thing is such a criminal, it's organized crime.
It really is absolute organized crime. It's unbelievable, and yet it's so unidentifiable to most people that they can't even fathom that their trusted, loving government, acting in the arms of the loving arms of the Constitution, could possibly be bending them over backwards. It's just crazy to me. And like, I'm sure, like you, once you begin to see it, you can never, ever, ever unsee it. Into the abyss, and it looks right back at you forever.
I would never invest in any stock. I will never invest in a pension fund. I will never do any of that stuff, because that would be immoral, in my opinion. Now, God forsake, people are hearing this. They're going to have cognitive dissonance. They're going to not want to believe it, or they're just going to ignore it. And let me tell you, you said you had a kid, you have a family, you got to support, and you're the whole history that we've been taught in school is, that's what you got. That's the moral thing to do, is to keep participating in evil so that you can have your family or have your house or have this and do the American dream, right? The American nightmare. That's what we're taught. That's what the education system is there for. That's what entertainment is there for, is to keep you invested or vested in this system. Therefore, you know that your pension fund is investing in all of the worst possible corporations that make this world a fucking misery, and yet you're still going to give them your money. You're not deciding where that money goes. They decide. Their board decides.
You have no choice but to give them your money, in most cases, just through taxes, because it's taxation or prison. Or you try to leave prison, then it's death.
Pretty much. So yeah, that's the situation. So if you're investing in pension funds, public or private, you have no choice where your money goes, and I guarantee your money's going to companies like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or any of the other companies that are going around the world and buying up all the water rights, for instance. Why are people starving? Why is the water not being cleaned in Africa? Why is it that 400,000 children die a day of diarrhea? Well, that's because all the clean water sources have been bought up by the corporations you invest in.
That's right. And that's the whole economic hitman stuff that John Perkins talks about, as far as getting these these bereft countries that are controlled by maybe communist or fascistic leaders, and getting them to take out massive loans to the World Bank or the International Bank of International Settlements, and getting them on the hook for these huge expensive debts. And then, of course, they can't ever make the premiums because the interest is larger than the premium. And then, you know, then we force them or depose them or force them to vote in favor of our policies in the United Nations. And it's just such a circle jerk. It's so disgusting.
Well, now that just sounds like a conspiracy theory.
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm a high school dropout. What do I know?
What would you know?
I stopped being educated by the system and started thinking for myself. And well, now shit. That, you know, I mean, I'm planning on leaving the post office. I told a couple people and they're like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, whatever I want.
I'm going to live.
I'm going to do whatever I want. And I'm going to be in the same position I was before I got here, which was free. And well, able to make up my own, as free as much as I can be, you know, but at least not bound and painting myself into a corner of servitude to a system that is fundamentally opposed to my very being and my soul. It would be, like you say, and the word is apt, immoral for me to continue in this system as far as working for the post office, because it is anathema again to everything I believe in.
Well, it proves the point that none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free.
Indeed. So, man, this is great. Thank you so much for talking with me, Clint. I love you very much. Let's get into some stuff here. As if we haven't already. This is fucking gold, but we still have a long ways to go. And you can speak with me today for as long as you want. I have pretty much the whole afternoon off for the next 3 or 4 hours. So I first came across you in a few different places, but the most recently when I first was really listening and when you really caught my attention was when you were speaking with Ricky Verandis on his podcast, Ripple Effect. I believe that was number 279. And we were talking about Red Pill Sunday School, and the bulk of it was about the coronavirus stuff, which I don't really want to get into so much. I do think it is relevant to the larger conversation. But what really got my attention was when you were talking about, I think you mentioned Title 42, Section 1981, which is the right for citizens to be extorted, robbed, and put into pain. And then you were really kind of blew my mind about the idea that the Constitution is just kind of a hoax. And that we've all been duped for the past 200 years or more to believe in this system that we have as rights. And I know a little tiny bit about the Social Security number being adopted at birth because there's a separate corporate body. And then I started watching your YouTube documentary, Corporation Nation, and I had to keep rewinding it because it was just such a mind-blowing idea, and it's no surprise at all that you've kind of been blacklisted from the fake truth community. And so I want to give you a chance to sort of open up any of those little topics I just mentioned, from the Title 42 to the crux of Corporation Nation. I know you have a whole new documentary that you just put together. So you can start on any of those things or just jump into whatever you want to talk about.
Oh, well. first of all, what is a corporation? Right? So if you're incorporated at birth, right? So you get this birth certificate, right? What is a birth certificate? How does all this work? And what does it mean to be incorporated as a man? What does it mean to be incorporated? And that's what I did my whole, like, season 2 of Red Pill Sunday School. I sort of wrote this book and read it out. And, you know, it turns out to be incorporated in the easiest way to possibly understand that, it means to be taken out of what you would call the law of nature, the law of God, right? In other words, inherent rights, like the type of rights that we all confuse with the Constitution, or we confuse with legal stuff, but it would be the inherent rights that you would have as a man. What we would generally say, that's wrong. You can't treat someone like that, right? You can't do that. It's a moral thing. And it involves choice, because what you find out is that while the legal law can be enforced, morals and values and that type of thing cannot be enforced. And that's the difference between the legal and the moral law. The moral law is always supposed to be higher than the legal law, because otherwise the legal law can be used to just absolutely destroy all morals, which is what we're experiencing in this place. And so what they do is they, you know, you're born, what they call natural born or whatever, you're born in the state. But the birth certificate, they come along, and the reason they're so eager for you to put a name on the birth certificate and get all your vital statistics, as they say, is because they're trying to form what is called a status or a person of U.S. citizenship. So in other words, they want to take you out of the state, which would recognize your inherent rights, which are in turn protected by the Constitution. Right? So it's very important to understand the Constitution only protects inherent rights. It does not give you any rights. Okay, that's the most important thing. So if you're claiming a right that is an inherent right, not a legal right, not a government-granted right, in other words, then the Constitution would protect you. It would protect that what it considers a God-given or inherent right. That's the Constitution. Okay, amongst its, the other aspect of it is, of course, the formation of the government structure that will protect those rights, which is why you had the Bill of Rights. They thought it important to put those in because those really got down to the nitty-gritty. We have the free speech and all that stuff, right? But even when you're talking about the right of free speech, people confuse that with just any type of speech. And, you know, that's not what it was intended. You never have the right to be in, well, I'll put it a different way. You never have the right to defame. You never have the right to, you know, you don't have the right to, you have the right to be an asshole, but you don't have the right to harm somebody by being an asshole. In other words, your speech cannot be harmful to others. You don't have, you know, these are not protected things when it comes to the notion of free speech. Free speech is something for men who self-govern. The Constitution is for people who self-govern. But what they do with the birth certificate is, if you read, and I put this in that Red Pill Sunday School show, and I show the document, it takes you out of the state, or in other words, it gives you residence in the state, but it gives you domicile in the United States. So what's the difference? Right? Anybody can come to the United States and get a residence in one of the states and go to college. Someone from China can get a temporary visa in the United States, which is that jurisdiction, and then be declared a resident of some state, a temporary resident, right? And then you go through the green card process and all that stuff. But the word res, first of all, R-E-S, when you look it up, it's a legal word that means thing or property. So a property, for instance, a slave is considered property. Properties do not have rights inherent to them. So a slave could never say, well, that's unconstitutional. A slave could never say, you're violating my inherent rights. The slave has no rights. And it turns out neither do citizens.
Nor do cattle or chickens or goats or pigs, right, or tractors or cars or trucks.
Well, they do, but they're, I mean, however, let's put it this way. However you treat your property are the rights it has. However the United States treats its citizens is the rights that we have. And all those rights that we, you know, I don't think right is really the right word for it. All those legal privileges we're allowed to do as agents of the United States or citizens of the United States can be revoked at any time. Anytime. Okay? And that's the difference between what is protected by the Constitution and what is a government-granted right, right? So go back to Title 1981. Title 1981 in Section 42 of the U.S. Code. It says you have the right to be put in pain, taxed, licensed, and exacted, punished and exacted from, which means extorted. Okay, those are your rights as granted by government. Those are not inherent rights. Those are the type of rights that you fight against as a self-governing man. You say, no, you cannot extort from me, and the Constitution would protect that point of view, or that claim, if you will, that
of
negative
course,
claim.
Yeah, for the pursuit of life, liberty, and property.
And that's
right?
the big difference, because here's what incorporation does. Okay, when you're incorporated into a society or into a group or into a corporate structure,
by giving a social security number, right? Is that where you're?
Well, no, because the birth certificate essentially does two things. The parents are giving up their paternal right, in other words, the blood right, which means that you're no longer by law considered to be. The law itself does not consider the blood right; it only considers the legal right. Okay, the blood right is taken away. So, and that means that your parents have to make a will. Instead of it being just considered a natural thing that the parents' property would then go to the children automatically, because that's how the law of blood works, then, okay. If you will, the natural law,
yeah.
Or the law that's protected by the Constitution. The legal law doesn't recognize that blood connection because the parents gave up that right at birth by signing and agreeing to the birth certificate process. What that does is it takes the child and gives it domicile in the United States. Unfortunately, and residence in the state. So the United States is Washington, D.C.
Okay. Yeah.
United States is a municipal corporation outside of the 50 states. It is not part of the actual states united. And another word for state is people. So it's not part of the people. It's not part of America. It is its own separate district. Now, what is a district? Another word for district is Caesar or seizure. That's where Caesar really comes from biblically. So if you're in a district, and we all are, that means that the word district translates to seizure, distress, and distraint. All right? And those are very bad words when you're thinking, oh, am I free or not? Well, no, I'm seized. So I'm seized at birth, put into the district. And the word domicile, why domicile is so important as compared to resident, which means a where property exists, right? Domicile means that means where does your law come from? What is the higher law? And that's why, for instance, marijuana. Yes, you can get a license to do marijuana medically or whatever in the state, but it's still illegal as a United States citizen. And that is your higher law, because that is your domicile. Now in the state, you're dealing with a state corporation. And that's where the word corporation comes in. So to be incorporated essentially means that you lose your right to say no. That's the basic foundation of freedom, is the right in every case to say no. You cannot force me to do this. No, you cannot do anything. That is called a negative or God-given or inherent right, is when you have the power to say no. But in the United States, you don't have that power because you've been incorporated. Your spirit has been taken away from your body and your mind. And your spirit is what drives your ability to say yes or no, to have moral thought. In a corporate structure, as a postal service worker, you're not allowed to say no. You're not allowed to have a moral conscience. You have a job. It is specifically written as an agent of that corporation, and you have to do that job. If you don't want to do that job, you have to quit. right? As a United States citizen, you are expected to do certain things at certain times, pay your taxes, be extorted from, right? Be punished, be put in pain. All those things are your rights, and you cannot say no. Okay? That is what it means to be part of a corporation. Or for men to be incorporated, it literally means to rid the people of their spirit so that they cannot be self-governing and self-sufficient. It means you've just put upon them a status, which we call a person, and the person is what is controlled by the government. So by filling out that birth certificate, you've created a person of the United States, a fictional character like an employee or what, you know, there's a lot of terms that are similar in their functionality. You've got employee, you've got trustee, you've got agent, you've got all these, whatever those are, they're always the lower, you know, low on the totem pole. You can't have an employee without an employer. You can't have a trustee without a trustor. You cannot have a citizen, a servant, without a master. You cannot have something that is inferior without something being, you know, higher and, yeah, and in control.
Superior.
And the, you know, what I found out is that anybody that's in power over you is actually a god. That's the meaning of the word god. False god. So when the Bible says take no other false gods, the highest, one of the highest laws, it's actually referring to, if you look up the word god, it means magistrate. It means attorney. It means judge. It means, you know, any magistrate, the president of the United States, the king of England, whatever, you know, even the you know, anybody that's in power over you basically is your god. And it requires you to voluntarily give up your inherent rights in order, or your God-given rights, to have them be in power over you, which means you've lost your right to say no. And that's essentially the whole system, is based on the taking away your right to, your moral objection, your moral compass is completely deserted, and in its place, the legal law has been set up. And once you understand what that means, you'll come to the understanding real quick that everything that is the legal law is designed and purposefully intended to be against the moral or spiritual law. In other words, the Bible, the law of God. And you got to understand that the Bible is not religion. The Bible is a book of law. It is nothing to do with Christianity. It has nothing to do with all the corporate structures that have called themselves religions. The Bible is actually a book of law. It used to be part of in the law books, it was called part of the common law, or the foundation of the common law. All the maxims of law come from the Bible that are foundational and actually prevent all of this stuff from happening to you. And so, and the reason for that is because we inherited we took basically the English common law, which of course the Bible is the foundation. So, man, once you get all of that under your belt and you realize that, yeah, your parents, unbeknownst to them through their ignorance, created a status, a person and a persona, and put you in it, or at least entrained you to be in it, because you're not actually acting in person until you reach the age of consent. And at that point, you do what's called a confirmation. You do what's called a ratification of the persona. In other words, you sort of become the person voluntarily. You become responsible for it, and it's debt, and it's a performance debt. So when you have a debt that's non-monetary, you know, the debt, because it's a performance debt. In other words, you have to follow the law. That's your performance. And what happens is that identity, that artificial structure called the persona, which in Latin means a mask, it's a status in the United States, you have the choice when you turn I think it's 18, the age of consent, you have a choice. You can either continue in that vein and assume all the responsibilities and keep acting in the name and using the social security number and doing all that stuff, or you can say, never mind, I'm not that person. I choose not to continue to use any of its information, its name, its number, its all the marks and all the signs that cause you to be considered as that artificial structure, that person, right? But for the most part, that's what school is for. That's what culture is for. That's what entertainment is for, is to, by the time we reach the age of consent, we know nothing about being free. We know nothing about what citizenship is, because we're only taught that we're free in America, right? We have, in other words, we have a franchise in America. That's what freedom means in the legal realm. And so we confirm, we never sign a contract. We don't, it's not required that you sign anything. It's what is required is that you act the part. So you continue to use the name. You use your social security number to get all kinds of things, from insurance to everything. I mean, you get your driver's license by handing them your social security number. Therefore, every time you use your driver's license, you're invoking the name. You're invoking the number. You're invoking the mark of the beast. And you are the beast. So, wow. So that's how this whole thing works. You were tricked through childhood to think that you actually are that fake status, that persona, to where the mask becomes permanent and you're walking around as if you are that person, which you are not, obviously. And if you recognize that fact and you declared it, you'd be declaring your negative right not to be called or recognized as an artificial person. But a corporation takes that away. When you're incorporated, the whole purpose of the birth certificate, when you're incorporated, you lose your ability to say no, you lose your spiritual moral compass, and your rights are taken away and replaced with legal rights. And it's important to remember those are all positive rights, not negative, and they do not allow you to say no, period, end of story. That then brings us into voting, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I have a couple of quick questions, though, about so at what point, because I never knew that upon growing up and entering into quote-unquote manhood and age of consent at 18, obviously I didn't know any of this stuff, and it's very doubtful that anyone's parents knew any of this stuff, because it seems like it's a very deliberate effort to keep this kind of information obscured and completely hidden away and forgotten about. At what point is that choice presented to someone who is maybe even partially aware of this kind of information? Is there, like, how does that choice of de-incorporation or reincorporation into that numbered identity, that mark, is that choice ever presented in a way that's tangible, where someone could actually make a move?
You got to remember, this is all voluntary, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's hard, because the truth movement has come along and told you that none of this is voluntary, that it's service at the barrel of the gun, which in a way is true. It's because you volunteer. Now, I'll give you an example here. Because citizenship is very much like enrolling in the military, right? You're already in citizenship, then you enroll in the military. By enrolling into the military, you've gone even further down the slavery tube, and now all of a sudden you've given up even more rights. You've been given certain rights as a soldier or whatever your rank is, but now they can beat the shit out of you and not be responsible for it. Now they can do all kinds of things that are horrible to you you trained, right?
Physically, mentally, and emotionally. They can traumatize you for life and then say thanks for your service.
And that's not really that different from regular citizenship, honestly. It's just not so obvious. But
it's encouraged and rewarded with medals.
Yeah, exactly. remember that it's all voluntary, though, right? Now, for citizenships, you know, they can invoke the right, their right of the draft. and therefore it is your right to be drafted. You agree to that as not because you signed a contract, but because in their system of law, persons of the United States, properties of the United States, must do this when required. They must give up their property for eminent domain. They must do this. Right. They must do that, right? This
selective goes, service.
This goes back to your right to be, you know, put in pain, punished, extorted, exacted from. Right? These are your rights. And see, this is what people think rights are a good thing. You know, the free man, the truly free man has no rights. He only has what we'd call inherent rights, right? That's why I don't like this word rights. Rights are something that are given to you by a master that can then be taken away. Only God-given rights cannot be sold or taken away unless you voluntarily do so. So what I'm trying to tell you is that even though you've gone this far, even though you've ratified and confirmed the legal fact that you are acting in person and therefore you're responsible for everything you've done, all the debts and everything, what you just said is the way out. And you can look up things like the Baby Act, for instance, in I think Black's Law, which tells you, you know, this was done before the age of consent. I had no idea I was being thrust into this whole thing, and I had no idea what I was getting into by ratifying and confirming. In other words, I didn't have all the information. And so people would plead the Baby Act because that means all this stuff was forced upon you before you were of the age of consent. And then you were tricked into continuing on. Right. So the actual identity, the actual persona was established at birth. Well, you have no control over that. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
Unless
it foisted you, upon you.
Right.
Foisted so, upon yes, you by the is, state, essentially, because it's taken advantage of your ignorant parents who are not ignorant. They're just unaware, uninformed, because it's a repeating cycle.
That is absolutely a defense, but not a defense to get out of debt. In my opinion, it's not a defense you can use if you have used the agency relationship. In other words, you're acting as a person in the United States. Therefore, you've gotten credit as you don't have credit. Your person does. It's backed by the full faith and whatever of government, right? Well, they can't do that for you. They can only do it for their own property, which is why they have control. They take money from your bank or your job, right? Because it's the person that we're always talking about. You're just the attorney or agent for that person. When the person is summoned to court, it cannot show up by itself because it's a mask. You have to show up wearing the mask and say, I am this person. It's a fiction. And as long as you believe that, well, great. But as soon as you stop believing it and you realize, oh, this is all a fraud, you know, here's where it gets tricky because, again, the only free man is a man that's self-responsible, self-sustaining, self-governing. And that man would never have any debt. That man would not have agreed to, the mammon, in other words, interest and usury and all that stuff, and gotten this entity, this fiction, in the debt that it's in. So you can't just go and say, well, you know, I'm going to buy a car and a house, and then I'm going to say I'm not going to be a citizen anymore. I mean, it's a contractual situation. And so in my study, I've come to the conclusion that all you really need is a death certificate. That's what you really are looking for, I think, to end the contractual relationship. And when you end a contractual relationship...
All right, hackers out there listening, pay attention closely.
Yeah. Well, when you end a contract, it's called an execution. Okay, you execute the contract. You finish the contract. There is no more contract because the tenets of that contract are fulfilled. And what I started learning is that, you know, we look at all these old stories about people getting executed and I started figuring out, you know, they weren't killing people like Hollywood portrays. They were executing them. In other words, if I do something in society that people don't like, then the collective society, which we would call government, would take away my personhood, my membership, if you will, in that society, and they would execute me. They would, or excommunicate, right? They would say, you no longer have the rights of everybody else here. Maybe they'll put a scarlet letter on you. Maybe they'll put another mark on you that says you are no longer part of this community, right? The same thing. They didn't kill people. Even the word decapitate is an interesting word when you look at it for what it really meant, to remove the head. Well, see, capitalism, the word capita in the Latin means per the head. So if you're being counted per the head or in capitalism, you're the commodity. That's what people are the commodity when you're talking about capitalism. Which goes back to our first conversation, which is all the pension funds and all the money they can make by you voluntarily, you know, allowing them to extort and exact from you through the pension system, right? So capitalism means they're counting you as a commodity per the head. How many heads are there in a herd of cattle? How many heads are there in the population of the United States? Right.
Hence the whole census and everything. So they're
exactly
that the head count. So they know how many vaccines to distribute by force or whatever.
Yeah, that is the line in the sand for me. That's like, okay, you try to force vaccinate me, I'm walking into the forest and never looking back.
Well, they won't have to force it. They'll just make sure that every institution, whether it's a grocery store, a daycare, school, sporting event, musical venue, won't permit you entrance. Without your proof, without your health papers.
Right. Let me
pull something. We'll enforce it. We'll mandate it ourselves.
Let me pull something up to sort of cement what I'm saying. Because I find that people, when they hear this, they have a certain understanding. And I think it'll be really beneficial. I just got to find it. Give me a second here.
Sure. Yeah. If I could... mention while you're looking for that. So it does seem to me, though, to be kind of a dead end, no pun intended, to say, off yourself on paper and then, you know, take back your sovereignty outside of the incorporation, because it seems like every seemingly worthwhile transaction, whether, like you said, buying a house, buying a car, getting a job, renting an apartment, all those things require some – they require Social Security number proof.
Right.
You know? If you were to be away from that system and that numbered system, what could a free sovereign person actually expect to do in this container of the United States? It seems like there's very little way out.
Right. And see, this goes back to, okay, what would happen if you were no longer a United States? Well, you'd be one of the people. You'd be one of the private people that make up the states. And therefore, you'd actually have the right again to own land. You'd have the right to have not a lodial title, because a lodial always belongs to the state. You'd have the right to have a free and clear, basically what we'd call a fee simple title. You'd actually have the land, and you could do whatever you wanted on your own land. You could even kill somebody on your own land defending it. Because you're no longer in the United States. You're in the state.
And you could argue that in the fake bullshit courts, correct? I mean, one thing I heard you say was, you know, you don't want to fight the censorship of YouTube or fight the traffic ticket from the cop face to face. And, you know, in the field, you want to fight these things in court. You could actually,
you gotta understand.
That's defendable in court.
You got to understand that once you relinquish the bond that is citizenship, you relinquish all those, you're relinquishing you're not under the United States code. You're not under the corporate code. You're not part of a corporation. You get your soul back, is what I'm trying to say. You get your spirit. You can say no. And there's not a damn thing that the United States can do about it, because you're now protected. All your rights are now protected under the Constitution. You've gotten that back. I'm not saying the Constitution gives you rights. I'm saying now you can exercise your inherent rights. Okay? Which is to say, no! See, that's the thing that is so elusive to people, is because we think that the United States and the states are the same thing, we don't understand that Washington, D.C. is not part of the states. Washington, or the United States, is like a monopoly board, okay? The board spreads out over all the public places, not the private places, but the public places that have been that are governed by the United States, okay? The private people have their own private land. That's why when you're driving along and you see private drive, well, you're not supposed to go that way unless you're just passing through. You're not supposed to be on private land because you're part of the United States, which is only the public lands. The Bureau of Land Management, the parks and all that stuff, and the cities, often, from what I understand, the cities are put into the public domain, but they're still owned by private people. So, again, there's the people of the United States, which would be the legitimate states or people. When they were doing the Constitution, there was a debate whether they should say we the people or we the states, because they mean the same thing. Again, if you understand that, a lot of things change. A lot of understanding of things, you know, go in a different direction, because you say, okay, when I say the United States, and I mean the states that are united to protect each other in a compact, that's different than saying, I'm saying united people, because people is a state. But when I say the United States as a corporate structure in Washington, D.C., well, I mean, that doesn't refer to states as people. That refers to a corporation that just happens to have state in its name. The state means nothing. Mm. Right? United States, it's like saying Federal Express. We know it's not federal, right? Just because it says federal in the corporation's name does not mean it's actually a federal corporation. Well, the states united, the people, are very different than the United States, which is just a name where state, the word state gets changed, if you will, into a corporation, basically United Corporations, if you will. And so they set up these state corporations. You got to remember, every city, every county, every district, those are called municipal corporations. They're not
right.
They're not the state.
That's something that I saw that really blew my mind watching Corporation Nation. I think you were looking at this. The state of California had, I think, 160,000 municipal.
It's nuts.
Yeah, these are municipal corporations that operate under their own personal constitutions. Is that wrong?
Well, I mean, again, the state constitutions. When a state is created after the Civil War, I mean, you know, a state. It's hard to explain because there's two layers. There's multiple layers. Like, you can have a district, for instance. Like, you can be in 100 different districts. Right? It's not like the water district and the sewer district and the electricity district and the garbage district, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to pay for all of those districts. They're stacked on top of each other. It's not like one district can't exist within another district's jurisdiction or domain, right? So each one of the districts is located within the county or the, you know, what are the municipal corporations. But you got to realize the state itself, when you're not talking about the private lands and the private people, when you say state, you're talking about the municipal corporation that is California, or the municipal corporation that is called the state of
Oregon.
Yeah, I was trying to think where you. Right. So, and that is created through the United States. I mean, when a state was created, go look at how they're created. They're created by Congress.
Interesting.
Right? The president signs and says, yes, this is now a state. Right? That's completely different than what it used to be. Now, it's hard because you have to consider the United States pre and post Civil War, because the Civil War was when the corporate structure basically took power. It was the Civil War was really the corporate United States versus the private people of the Southern states who confederated. And, you know, that's what's really interesting is we had the Articles of Confederation, and it turns out the word confederation just means conspiracy.
Yeah.
Combination.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Are you familiar with Scott Horton? A guy named Scott Horton?
Only Hortons I know are in Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, I'm not sure how connected you are to a lot of these, I'd say, like, ultra-libertarian types. But Scott Horton is a historian. He's actually, I think he's kind of a young guy, maybe my age. I'm 42. I'm not even sure how old he is. But he's an incredible historian. And he did this pretty long episode on a podcast called Free Man Beyond the Wall, Pete Quinones. He and his brother, Scott Horton and his brother, did a really great deconstruction of the real reasons that the South wanted to secede from the Union in the Civil War, and what the real motivation for the Civil War actually was. And it was, you know, the tariffs, and a really fascinating conversation. But it just reminded me of that conversation, because there's so much mythology applied to the Civil War and the bastard Abraham Lincoln and the slave trade, and just the falsity of what the Civil War has been taught in schools is just absurd when you actually start to learn about the real methods and the real motivations behind the proposed secession and the economic bullshit that was going on through slave trade, through free labor, essentially. It's really something else, but that's just a little sidebar.
Well, and of course, if you really go into it, you come across are you familiar with, did he talk about the 13th Amendment, the first 13th Amendment?
Yes. Yeah.
Which,
yeah, I recommend that conversation to anyone. It's a great conversation. Scott Horton's a badass.
Yeah. The 13th Amendment was created before the Civil War.
Yeah.
And it legalized slavery. Basically, it would be like decriminalizing marijuana. It decriminalized slavery. In other words, we would live in a very different world today if the 13th Amendment was actually ratified. And it was starting to be ratified by states. And then the Civil War broke out. And the reason the Civil War broke out is because the Southern states were actually trying to protect their slaves. Hollywood, of course, will make you think slaves were treated horribly, and that might have been the case, just like some pet owners are horrible, but the majority are good, right? You treat your pets, So the truth of the matter is they were protecting their slaves because the United States wanted to free all slaves and not give them any status, not give them anything, which means that you could just go lynch that man and he would have no rights as considered by the United States, and no one would get in trouble. You could, just absolutely – it was almost like a eugenics thing, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, it certainly was. I mean, and Abraham Lincoln was the number one point man for that, because he, is historically quoted as saying that the – African American, the Negro is subhuman, and he wanted to round them all up export them.
Also quoted as saying, "I don't give a crap about slavery.
Yeah,
I care
he had
not."
No intention. Yeah, no intention to abolish slavery. His only goal was to maintain the Union at all costs, and if that meant freeing slaves, sure.
And that's what you have to understand. When he says preserve the Union, he's saying preserve the administrative state that is now called the United States.
Right, the corporation. Right?
The corporate structure that has been set up. He wasn't interested in preserving the rights of men or the rights of the people. He was interested in preserving the corporation in which he was CEO of, in which all of his relatives, this is another thing you have to understand, is the genealogy of all this. If you don't know that, if you don't know Trump and Hillary are cousins and have the same great-great-great-grandfather, if you don't know that George Bush and John Kerry carry the same bloodline back to Vlad the Impaler.
I just learned that the other day, honestly.
Right? Clint, if you don't understand
the craziest
thing,
I just learned that.
Yeah, if you don't understand that every president is a cousin and that everybody in Congress and that Barack Obama is actually not black, he's white because white refers to the color of his or the purity of his blood in the bloodline, right? That yeah. Barack Obama's cousin is direct descendant of the kings of England, just like all the other presidents. If you don't know that, well, then you're going to always be lost. You're actually going to think that a normal person can be, you know, that a United States citizen can actually become president.
I know, dude. I know. Shoot for the stars. Dream, well, live, laugh, love. It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating how this information that you know and that I know, you are super adept at it. That you have been you've dedicated the bulk of your life, I gather, from preserving and collecting and sharing this information. It's incredibly frustrating and defeating to know that it's out there for the taking. But we are too stupid to know where to look. Most people are too blinded, too busy, too tired to even think about where to look for this information. It's not that it's hidden, but it's not widely available. Basically, what I'm saying is it's not mainstream. Hollywood's not going to make movies about it. It's going to be blacklisted, shadow banned, censored at every turn. But it doesn't make the information go away.
I think what's the important lesson to learn is that what is presented as history is just as harmful and, you know, enslaving as what is not presented as history.
Right.
Right? Because this, I mean, what we're talking about is our history. It is the history of our parents and those before them that were tricked into signing their children over at birth to become wards of the state and give up their paternal power, only to be handed back the child and say, here, you take care of this child, which is now not actually your own, which is why the courts can, you know, basically steal your child, or the Child Protective Services can come and take your child because it's not your child anymore.
Yeah. Right? I just delivered a Social Security card to one of my customers on my route, who's actually one of my neighbors. They just had a beautiful baby girl. And I just delivered Social Security Corporation's paperwork to their address, and I just sighed, knowing that you and I were going to have this conversation. I was just makes my heart heavy.
Just read the Social Security information that comes with it. It says this is not your property.
I know.
It's the property of government, and so are you.
And it's written in such a confounding, stupid, but yet clear legalese that you just read it and most people are under pressure. Like I said, they're blinded, dumb, and tired. They just sign, initial here.
Here's the thing. Remember I was talking about the getting a death certificate?
Right.
This is what
Pay
I think.
Pay attention, hackers.
This is what I think will help people truly understand, because the number 7 is a very significant number in a lot of things. And it's biblical, and it comes back to basically after 7 years in law, a lot of times, if something isn't invoked within 7 years, it's considered as dead or executed or no longer in service, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Lemon Law of 3 days. That's actually biblical. You know, Christ rose in 3 days, as they say metaphorically. Well, yeah, it's kind of the same thing, the Lemon Law. But this is from the Huffington Post, October 10th, 2013, okay? I'm just going to read the whole thing.
And this is mainstream. I mean, HuffPost, that's right. The go-to for this.
I'm going to read the whole article. It's not that long, but it's very important to understand what's being said here.
In the Huffington Post. Cool. Thank you, man. Fire away.
Findlay, Ohio, and this is actually from the Associated Press, so, you know, anybody could carry it. That's
yeah, it's from The Wire.
Things get their stories. Okay. An Ohio man is finding out there's no easy way to come back from the dead. Donald Miller Jr. went to court this week to ask a county judge to reverse a 1994 ruling that declared him legally dead after he had disappeared from his home 8 years earlier. But the judge turned down his request, citing a 3-year time limit for changing a death ruling. Hancock County Probate Court Judge Alan Davis called it a strange, strange situation. We've got the obvious here. A man sitting in the courtroom. He appears to be in good health, said Davis, who told Miller the 3-year limit was clear. So he's quoting law, legal law. I don't know where that leaves you, but you're still deceased as far as the law is concerned, the judge said. So remember, the law either considers blood or status, right? Mm-hmm. The law, he can't say that he can say he's legally dead, but he can't say he's naturally dead or dead by blood, okay? Miller, so what does he say? I don't know where that leaves you, but you're still deceased as far as the law is concerned. Miller resurfaced about 8 years ago and went to court so that he could get a driver's license and reinstate his social security number. Here's what happened. His ex-wife had opposed the move, saying she doesn't have the money to repay the social security benefits that were paid out to her and the couple's 2 children after Miller was declared dead. Here's the question. Why was Miller declared dead? Because he was gone, completely out of the picture, and his wife declared him dead therefore. So in other words, he didn't use the name, the number, never got credit, never used anything that said, I am this person.
For Robin 7 years? Is that the assumption? For Miller, 7 years?
Robin Miller said her former husband vanished because he owed big child support payments and that the overdue payments had totaled $26,000 by 1994. The Findlay Courier reported, Miller, who was 61, who now lives in the northwest Ohio city of Fostoria, told the judge that he disappeared in the 80s because he had lost his job and was an alcoholic. He lived in Florida and Georgia before returning to Ohio around 2005. His parents told him about his quote-unquote death when he came back to the state. He said it kind of went further than I expected to. It just kind of took off and ended up different places. There's a seven year statute of limitations. In other words, okay. Now that's in the United States. So the judge declared him dead because a death certificate was filed declaring him dead, even though he wasn't dead. All right?
Wow. Okay.
And when he went back to try and say, look, I'm alive, this is where you realize they're not talking about the man, they're talking about the person. In other words, the contract was considered executed. So the person was executed, the status. Now we go to the guardian.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. The Romanian court tells a man he is not alive. Constantine Reliu, 63, fails to overturn a 2003 death certificate because he appealed too late. So what is he doing? He's saying that death certificate doesn't apply to me. I'm still alive, not understanding how legal law works, and that the person that he's trying to say is still alive is considered dead because it's a corporate structure. It's not real. It's fiction. It's executed. It's a contract that was executed. I am a deceased man who is still alive since Constantine. In a case reminiscence of a Kafka novel, a Romanian court has ruled that a 63-year-old man is dead despite what would appear to be convincing evidence to the contrary, the man himself appearing alive and well in court. Constantine asked the court and the town to overturn a death certificate obtained by his wife after he had spent more than a decade in Turkey, during which time he was out of contact with his family. The court told him he was too late and would have to remain officially deceased. Now, what kind of a mindfuck is that?
Wow.
Here's what he says. I am officially dead, although I am alive, he bemused to the media. I have no income, and because I am listed dead, I can't do anything. So he's trying to participate in society without that persona, without that mask, without that fictional character that he's played all his life. Right. It was taken away.
And by participating in society, I can only assume he's trying to get a job, get a place to live, buy stuff. Right?
Well,
I mean,
with no, you can't get credit. Yeah. Right? And see, what you're probably thinking of now is that sounds horrible. But you see, this man has been given a gift. He just got free.
Yeah.
Right?
But free to do nothing in the construct of society, though. That's the problem I have with it. Is that, yes, that's free, but what is that?
That's what true freedom is. And
I understand that.
That's what I'm trying to tell you, is that freedom is not the right to get credit, because that's mammon.
Yeah.
Okay? That's getting money that doesn't even exist. Right? You're part of the problem. You're a pensioner, essentially. You're back to where you start, right?
Yeah.
Freedom. What is freedom? Freedom is self-responsibility, self-government.
Self-authority and autonomy. Yeah.
Right? Government means mind control, so self-governing your own mind.
Yes.
Meaning following the law of God or the law of nature, right? Which doesn't, you know, again, that refers to the Bible, which does not allow money, does not allow usury, does not allow interest, does not allow contracts, does not allow fiction, does not allow lies, does not allow, it's against personhood, it's against flattering titles, meaning your whatever job you're working, you're called a title, right? See, this is the lost knowledge, man. This is what people don't understand freedom is. Freedom is the fact that you cannot say, I am something other than I actually am. What does the Bible say? Never declare yourself something that you are not. See, this is the law of nature. The law of nature does not allow you to play the fictional game. It does not allow you to do anything. Now, the other aspect of this is if you, you know, pull out a dollar bill, pull out a $5 bill. It does say on there, your currency, it says this bill, right? This can be used as legal tender, both private and public.
That's right. For all debts, public and private.
Right.
This note is legal tender for all debts, public and private.
Does not mean that he can't use that still. But he'd be using it in a legitimate way. In other words, if you're using it privately, as the people do in the States, well, they're not paying federal taxes on it. They're not paying state taxes because they're not part of the corporate state.
Right.
You see, they might pay their own taxes that they agree to in a private capacity under private law, private state law. But, you know, there's you see the difference.
I do. And so it makes me wonder then. So if you were really a legally dead person like this gentleman, this Ukrainian man, or was it Romanian, or even the guy in Ohio,
it's universal. It doesn't matter what country you go to. Every country has set up this de facto illegitimate corporate structure and tricked people into the birth certificate process or some other process that takes you out of the legitimacy, out of the people, and puts you into a corporate structure and gives you a persona.
Right. So if you're this dead guy and you still wanted to engage in society as free as you could be, as a real free person, as a dead person, as a legally dead person, but still walking around, I think in a lot of ways, I'm thinking that perhaps cryptocurrencies would be beneficial because you could set those up and you could possibly work out a deal with someone who could help you exchange those cryptos for actual cash, and then you could buy things with cash.
That's the slave in you talking.
I know, I know.
Because you've been trained to think that, how can you live without the fiction of money, right? How can anything be done without money, right? And that's true if you're walking on the Monopoly board.
I know. But that's the thing, Clint, is that the life that we are been contained in is the Monopoly board.
Well, okay. So you realize you're in the Matrix. What do you do?
You wake
either stay
up
in the matrix.
Get out. Yeah.
You either stay in knowing that you're a simulator, a hypocrite, or you get out. And you, I mean, basically what you're telling me and what everybody tells me the same thing until they understand what they're actually saying is you're afraid of nature. You're afraid of that in which supports your life. You're afraid of fruit and vegetables that grow on trees instead of come to you irradiated in a grocery store that you pay money for. That's what you're telling me. Right?
I would like to believe that's not what I'm saying, but I also have a suspicion that there is more truth to what you're saying than I can actually understand right now.
It's part of our social construct fear anything. You know, the fear, I think that should be a new disease, because what I find is that everybody suffers from it, including me. Fear of nature, fear of reality, fear of truth, right? Which is the whole foundation of being free, is the acceptance of truth and never allowing fiction to take over that, you know, the actual understanding and picture of what truth is. That's what we're afraid of. I mean, that's ridiculous, but I mean, it's a great social programming. I mean,
it is ridiculous, and it is awesome in its scope. It is breathtakingly pervasive over every single aspect and nuance of our lives, whether we consider ourselves in or out of society. It seems like there is nowhere ever anywhere anyone could go at all that Coke and Pepsi have not already been. But they do, and they will throw your ass in prison if you don't buy them.
Well, and that could be true, and it would be an illegitimate act. In other words, they wouldn't have the law on their side anymore, because here's, you know, poor Constantine. He's like, oh, shit, I can't participate in all the things that normal slaves participate in. And yet what he can do now and what his, you know, he's suddenly free. He's free of the Matrix. He's free of the fiction, but because he has absolutely no idea what it means to be free, right? Because we all think we're free while we're in the legal system.
Right, yeah, it's the goldfish in the bowl.
Exactly. So now he's actually free and he's scared shitless, doesn't know what to do because he can't get any fictional things put on him because he's not considered property of the state anymore because he's not a person.
Right, and he pines for the slavery of money.
Uh-huh. Just as you, just
for
as
the slavery,
are.
Yeah.
Just as you are, and just as you know, there's a reason that I'm not sitting here saying, "Look, I'm out in." If I was free, I'd be out there working my vegetable garden and tending to my flock of whatever, and I would not be bothered coming on the radio and doing this, right? but as you say, the problem is that everybody that is good that I know is stuck in this system. I want to be able to depend on these people, and I want them to be able to depend on me, which is, again, charity, love, forgiveness, and all that stuff straight out of the Bible. Yeah. If that is the law.
The real community, the real definition of family and community and trust, which is all heart and love and mind and shared responsibility, individual responsibility as well.
Well, what it is, you see, what it is above all is choice.
Yes.
You choose. But you see, you don't have that choice as a citizen. Now, this guy, he now is faced for the first time in his life with the choice. He's always been in a causality. He's always been given the choice between two evils and chosen whichever evil suits his disposition at the time. Now, all of a sudden, he has the choice to say no, has the choice to be free, and he's scared shitless.
Yeah.
And so anybody, I guess the point I'm trying to make is if you're really you know, there's two ends of the spectrum, and there's really no in between. You're either enslaved or you're not. And total, you know, if you're looking for true freedom, any other type of freedom is called a franchise. It means you're given rights which can be taken away from you, and you could be, you know, all the rights that are given. Or you have self-governance, you have self-responsibility, you have, right, just like every other creature in nature except humans. So, you know, this is us coming to the end of the road and looking out over the beauty of the cliff to see nature and how beautiful it is and all the wide open spaces in the world that have no population whatsoever.
Yeah.
And we're scared to go there. We're
scared to go there because what we know there to be true is the barest aspects of survival, which can be boiled down simply to aggression, violence.
I don't agree with that at all, because I mean, maybe if you're going it alone, and this is why I get on the radio and I try to convince people, hey, look, we can start over. We can, you know, just what you say is it's true in a way, but it's also beautiful. It's also wonderful to think that you could go and just start over, start building, build a castle if you want. Find some running water and you know, build a society of free men who agree to be bound to each other in a way that is spiritual, not legal, not required, but choice. That sounds wonderful to me, but I've yet to find anybody who can't get over this notion that nature's going to somehow harm them or destroy them. Or, you know, I mean, I would give anything to have that feeling of true freedom, and I've never experienced it before. The only time I think I ever experienced was maybe backpacking in the wilderness for a week.
Right.
Until the dry food, you know, the freeze-dried food runs out. And,
right.
Well, but at the same time,
well, I guess that's kind of where I was going with that statement, was not so much of like, oh, you know, human beings or you and your family or even you and your best friend going it alone in the wilderness. But I'd say like when you're, you know, metaphorically looking over the cliff into a deep forest and you know what's there is time and freedom and space, but there's also, you know, that survival where we have competing life forms that are all trying to survive, and ultimately it's a very violent and aggressive God. Action of it's survival. God. It's God. It's what it is, and it's survival. And so, in order to embrace that, I think on a human level, we'd have to be able to embrace some part of our humanity that we've been trying to bury behind these lies and behind these ideas that we could do this all peacefully or that we could get together. Opposite. You do?
I think it's the opposite.
I love that about you.
I think what we're in now is survival. I think what we're in now, where doctors are the third leading cause of death, where the medical system kills instead of heals, where government is tyrannical instead of, you know, helpful to be. I think we're in survival mode now, and it's controlled by this system of law that we agree, well, I should say volunteer to be under. I think we're in survival mode, and that is reflected by our health. That is reflected by our mental state. It is reflected by the fact that we accept lies and fictions and men calling themselves gods or magistrates. Experts. I think we're in survival mode as slaves, right?
Yeah, I honestly can't argue with that at all. I think you're right on.
Being free in nature, that would be living. We pretend to make a living in the legal setting, which means I collect money and I spend it and I have debt and I pay. Over here, I would be living without any of that. That's not survival. That's life. That's enjoying the fruits of your labors. That's sharing my oranges and taking your apples and not having any transaction except one of love and charity. I gave you four apples. You only gave me three oranges. You owe me an orange. No, yeah. No, that's not how things work in
reality. Until I get that orange, I'm never doing business with you again. And I'll sue you for that orange, and I'll ruin your family, and I'll kick you out of the village. And
we've been turned into a bunch of spoiled little frickin' brats.
So, okay, that's a good segue for it. How do you think that is? how long has it been this way, do you think? And what is your suspicion as to why it is that way? Do you think we've always been that way? Do you think it's in our nature?
It's been that way since we learned to talk.
Hmm.
Because remember, everything in the fiction, everything in the legal realm is nothing more. Every corporation is words on paper. It is the trickery of language that causes this. It is the lack of understanding of what words used to mean compared to, you know, and a reason I said is because when I started really studying the Bible and I looked at every word and I started understanding what language used to be poetic. It used to be an expression of emotion and beauty. You know, it wasn't a technical language at all. And therefore, if you read the Bible in the literal language that English is, you're not going to get anything out of it, right? Even people in Greece, for instance, say you cannot translate Greek to English because they're two different languages. One is a language of beauty and poetry, and then English is they call it Dog Latin, which is a specific grammatical set designed to enslave people, right? Because the difference is that you're giving power to words. Names, okay? They created the noun, for instance. What is a noun? A noun is a name. And if you define what a noun is, it's a person, place, or thing. Right. Does that sound familiar? What do we live in? Person, places, and things. What's a person? A status. What's a place? A jurisdiction. What's or a municipal corporation, right? I am in Chicago. Well, Chicago, I hate to say, is a municipal corporation. It doesn't actually exist in nature. It's not real. You just believe it exists. And then, yeah, a thing is a property. So what is a noun, a name? See, that's the difference between the language of poetry and beauty and a language of legalese is that noun, right? You have the verb and you have the adjective over here in the poetic, but then you have the name. And if I respect the name of something over the actual, creation that name is attached to, then the reality of the thing that the name represents becomes more important and more powerful than the actual thing. And that's how you have slaves, right? What is a slave? Slave is a name. A slave is a noun we put on something. It's a status.
Right.
And it's a person, a persona. It's not real. Yeah.
It's a name and a thing.
And that's why
within a place. That's really interesting.
Yeah, okay. Well, and that's why it's so important to understand the word Jehovah in the Bible, which was replaced with the word God, right? Jehovah, yeah, considered the name of God, but why is it so special? Why is that word so powerful? And the reason is because it's actually a verb. This is what people, when they're reading, when they talk about religion and they talk about God, not understanding what God was meant to be. If you go back into the lexicons of language, the original Hebrew, Greek, you know, Chaldean, all that, Jehovah, YHVH, and back through the languages, all those symbols, right? It had a very specific meaning. It wasn't meant to be challenged. It wasn't meant to be debated, right? Jehovah meant self-existence, or if you will, self-evidence. That's how it's defined. And therefore, everything that exists that is not man-made is part of Jehovah, or as we say, God, right? But God is a very secondary term, and it refers to if you really want to understand, then go back to the old court cases in the United States or England, and you'll see that when you went to court, you were going to the bank to plead to the God of the court, and you were praying to that God. So now we say we're pleading to the judge, but it used to be we were praying to God, because God means magistrate, it means judge, it means anyone in power, right?
Yeah, right.
But we've lost the meaning of these words, and therefore, when we go to the Bible and it says God said this, or God or the Lord said this, we don't know that's referring to a king or a magistrate who calls himself a god, because God used to be this generic term that meant someone in power. And so people will even say, you know, that God, he does horrible things in the Bible. He kills children. He does this. No, actually, that's a bad translation because you don't know the difference between God and Jehovah.
Wow.
The Catholic Church ensured that the name Jehovah was not put into English versions of the Bible. It was 6,000 times Jehovah was used. Now it's the word God or Majest or King or, you know, whatever word. There's a
Landlord.
Well, there's Lord God and there's you know, I've forgotten half the terms I learned. Now it's all in my book, but it's amazing.
It's really funny and interesting, especially in the concept of, you know, in a court where it's his honorable, you know, his or her honorable judge, blah, blah, sure. blah. And then, of course, you know, everyone has to rise as enters or she enters the room and then sits down. And then you are permitted to sit just like royalty and everything else, which is of the most highness, his high honor. XYZ.
And the queen made it law that you have to call judges by their, you know, higher judges as lords. Yeah. So the difference, what is the difference? Well, one type of God is man-made. It's a title. It's a name. Whereas Jehovah is a reference to the verb, okay, the action that is existence itself, right? So the universe exists. It exists despite man. It's permanent. It doesn't begin or end. It has no beginning and it has no end. It is existence.
It's so when omniscient and omnipresent, right?
When we say supreme being, well, being can be taken two ways. If you think of it in the noun form, well, yeah, then it's an entity that has a. But if you think of it in the verb, what is being? It means to exist. That is God. God is to exist. That is the meaning of the word. So being, the supreme being, if you understand that in the intention it was meant, the supremacy of all being, all existence, all that is happening right now is God until, you know, infinity, and it has no beginning or end. It is the omega and right. All that stuff makes sense if you understand the intention of these words. I'll give you some other examples of words that'll help you understand how we are so controlled, right? We talked about prestige, which is a term that means magic. And yet they classify colleges, universities. They rate them by their prestige. Oh, I have a Harvard education. I have a prestigious education. Well,
yeah,
that's because universities aren't what you think they are, right? Universities are completely different entities than what people think. And so they rely on the delusion, which is what prestige means, the illusion of integrity. They have none. It's a complete bullshit persona that the college gives off, so that in the background, what's it doing? Well, it's got its sports franchises, it's got its patents and all the research it does, it's got its hospitals, right?
It has its executive and expert opinion that is the backbone of academia, which informs the so-called scientists, the scientism that you speak of, which I think is absolutely accurate. And it's because of these experts and this chokehold on learning, quote unquote, and education, quote unquote, that supports and upholds the scientism, which then informs the policies, and that informs the lay of the law of the land and under God.
Just like any other entity, there's the legitimate, what they call an Alima Sonori corporation, which is a charity corporation. So in other words, it's supposed to be a free education, but then they attach the corporate structure. They put you into the corporate structure, charge you outrageous amounts to go to their school, just like the post office charges you the premium rate because you're willing to pay it. You don't know any better. You don't know there's a legitimate post office that you could be using if you were the legitimate people of the States United. But instead, you're this corporate structure, and they take advantage of that in every way. That's where this notion of being put in pain, taxed, licensed, and extorted, punished, and exacted comes from, because Exaction is a term that means extortion, but it's basically what a police officer does when he writes you a ticket, taking something from you that is not his due. That's what exaction means. So it's extortion, right? So all of these entities, they have their legitimacy and then they have their prestige, which covers up the fact that they're acting illegitimately, right? Take another word, grocery, one of my favorites. What is a grocer? We go to our friendly neighborhood grocery store. Well, what is grocery? Do you know? Why would I go to a grocer? What is a grocer? It's someone who collects products and then charges outrageous prices for them in a monopoly. Used to be a crime to be a grocer. To engross means to buy up a bunch of products where no one else can compete and then charge outrageous prices. And when you have all the grocery stores owned by government through stock investment and all the boards of directors agreeing to engross at a certain rate, you know, this is why, you know, you have different, you know, we have our Smiths here and we have our Harmons. Harmons is the high end store that caters to richer people. And you have Smiths that caters to lower end, lower class people, right?
Yeah, we got that here. We got the Whole Foods and we got the Fred Meyer.
Sure.
And
sure.
Like
so
that.
different levels of engrossment. So your friendly neighborhood grocer, to be a grocer used to be a high misdemeanor crime. And you can look that up in the dictionaries. That's what it means. So the fact that we are tricked into a friendly grocer, neighborhood grocer, which is, you know, a friendly neighborhood grocer, a big, massive corporation that's in all kinds of, and yet it's somehow a neighborhood grocer. All right. This is the kind of mind control and trickery that has befallen us because we've lost the meaning of words. We don't know what these words mean anymore. We use them without understanding. We go to court and we're expected to speak legally and we speak normally as if we're talking to a normal man, but we're actually required to speak the legal language and understand it, and he's required only to speak in the legal language, the law Latin, in other words.
Right, yeah, and then we paint ourselves into corners trying to explain our position when we have no idea how to speak the language.
Well, and why? Because we're talking reality. We're like, yeah, you know, that is actually a tree. It's gonna, but in legal language, usually means the opposite. So everything we say in the dumbed down, you know, language, in the legal, we take it opposite. Right? Because legal undoes God's law. It's specifically designed for sinners.
I find the inversion and perversion, subversion, really subversion, perversion, and inversion of language to be one of the most fascinating things I've encountered in my life, especially in 2020 and over the last 4 years, really. It's just since the Orange Man has been in office, this is when I first started paying attention to it. But the perversion, subversion, and inversion of language, so that when you're hearing something, especially that's being touted by these so-called fucked up lying experts, I believe that the exact opposite or near opposite is actually what's really going on. And do you have any ideas about how the inversion became the norm? Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I can only say that when I'm reading the Bible, I'm in English, I'm reading it and being confused, as all Christians are, because the language has been inverted into a legal form, and only by going back to the original intention can I discover what the Bible is actually trying to explain to me. That's the biggest problem there is. And, you know, you can go 20, 30 different places in the Bible and it says, do not respect persons. What's a person? Well, it's a corporation. It's a status. It's a flattering title. It's anything artificial. So, you know, it's laying out the law that says do not ever give anybody power through a name, through a title, or through a status, person, place, or thing. And yet that's the whole legal system is based on that very thing, based on the noun, based on the name, right? So everything is inverted in the legal system. So you cannot read the Bible in English, is my point. In the English that we're accustomed to, the dumbed down slave language that English is designed to be, to confuse and cause us to be slaves. I mean, that's why they call it dog Latin. Anytime you hear the word dog in legal, it refers to a four-footed animal or a beast, and that's why they called slaves as dogs, because it's like a pack animal, like a mule or a beast of burden. Exactly.
Beast of burden. Yeah. I find it, it just seems so obvious why this language of the Bible, which is a book of law, would be subverted and inverted to become legalese in order to keep people slaves, cattle, beasts of burden, confused, confounded, tired, and abused, so that we do not know how to fight back, and we can only interpret it as we see it as the truth, but subverted in courts and in legalese. It just seems...
Well, and this applies...
It seems evil. It seems like witchcraft.
It is evil. I mean. And that's I mean, yeah, it is actual the meaning of evil. You got to understand, too, evil only comes from men. There's no such thing as evil. There's no good and evil in nature. Nature and Jehovah is neutral. There is no judgment. You know, the judgment is, hey, if you put a cancer-causing chemical in your water, you're going to get fucking cancer.
Yeah, there's
is judgment.
There's a great book called The Lucifer Principle. I can't recall the author's name right now, but The Lucifer Principle is such a fascinating journey into the nature of what is considered evil through nature itself, and that there is no concept of evil or good or morality in the natural world, that all of these things are necessary aspects of life on earth and elsewhere.
It's more important to realize there's no lies, there's no fiction. So in that way, morals aren't necessary. In other words,
there's no construct.
There's nothing to drive you away from your natural instinct and your natural habitat. But with us, this is why we have to have this moral compass, this moral law, so that the anti-moral, the legal law, the anti-God law, doesn't ever take over as it has, and literally squash any moral power that we have. And again, that right to say no is everything. And I was going to say that's when you're looking at nature, you can't consider it as you consider our societies, because they don't have lies. They don't have they don't have language as we do. They don't have any opportunity to invert things. And that's what we need to learn again. I think what has to happen is we need to be fully aware of this trickery and this language, but we have to always concentrate on not using the noun. Not the name, right? We need to never give power to words over the thing they represent. And that is a voluntary, consensual thing. I can never use a word to gain power over you, or for that matter, over any part of reality or nature. And yet at the same time, we have to have this ability to respect, hey, I see that you have built, you know, this garden and this home on this land. I respect that that is your domain, and that, you know, it's I'm not going to mess with it. It's the do no harm principle, if you will. Right. And it should be reciprocal. And yet, at the same time, you got to understand that just because you've built this domain, the law of nature, if you will, instructs that you can't build anything that will prevent the course of nature, or the course of man or commerce or whatever. You can't say you must stay off my land if that land is so big that I'd have to, that's called an easement. In other words, if I go through your land, I can get there in 20 minutes. If I have to go around your land, it's going to take me days
to make my
journey. That's called an easement. That's a natural law concept, or law of nature concept that – I should say a common law concept, I guess. But, you have to have – you have to have both. You have to have the knowledge of how they can trick you. And then you have to decide not to ever apply or let that happen, right? That's the key to living in a free society, in my opinion. You can't just be ignorant and, be a freaking fairy in the woods, You have to actually have knowledge, and you have to pass that knowledge down. And I think that's what the Bible is. I think the Bible is the key to freedom. I know that government recognizes a higher authority, and for one thing, it recognizes an act of God in the insurance sphere, and everything is based on insurance. When it says an act of God, if you looked up what an act of God is, it's an act of nature, something that's outside of man's ability to prevent or cause, earthquakes, floods, that kind of thing, that's an act of God. Therefore, government is recognizing a higher authority and a higher law than its legal system, right? And that is the place where you have to be. You have to be able to say, I am an act of God. I wasn't created by man. I was created by Jehovah. I'm part of God. It's not even that I am actually part of existence. You cannot put anything artificial upon me. You cannot force me to do anything because I'm not acknowledging your names. I'm not a person. I'm not in a place, and I'm not a property. If anything, I'm a property of existence, just like oxygen is a property of water. But the kind of property they're talking about in the legal realm is completely different than the kind of property that I would say is property of God, for instance, right? The grass is a property of existence, property of God, self-existence. It's not there because, man created it and planted it. And I'm talking about in the wild, of course.
Right. Wow. That's fucking awesome. This is so great. Thank you so much for all this cool, fucking amazingly compelling conversation. This is awesome. I want to steer into a slightly different direction, I think. Stay tuned for the conclusion of this conversation coming up immediately. And of course, it goes without saying, I would love to remind you guys that this is a value for value production. I produce this stuff for you for free. I only ask that you determine what kind of value you got from that. Consider what kind of value you got from spending the time listening to this, and then place a dollar on that. What was that equivalent to in a financial sense? And then consider submitting that dollar amount, that value, back to the show at any of the support links in the show notes. Or you could even go further, and you could support Clint Richardson himself. You can go to strawmanstory.info, request a PDF of the book, watch his videos, donate to his webpage, support his work. He's in the same position you and I and everyone else is in. We all need each other. We all need each other's help and support. And we ask that you look at the value of what this kind of work is, the value of what kind of information is being brought, and how that value serves you. And is that worth the sacrifice? Consider the sacrifices made to create and consolidate and collate that information to present it to you for free. Really, you're just generating karma for yourself in this life and the next. All right, guys. Much love. Here's a couple of closing songs from my buddy down in Tennessee, from Abstinence Sixpack, the one and only Sir Seat Sitter. Thank you, Chris.
It's the 9th of December, 2019. The IG report drops any minute. Much excitement, unseal the indictments, can't wait to see Hillary in prison. Then the IG report drops suddenly, and I scroll through to see what it of the ball together. John Brennan may be above the law, and Clapper may always run free, but we still might get McCabe and we'll all be good.